much. Thank you all for being here today. I'm so honored to have a chance to share my research with you all today. As she mentioned, I am still a doctor in training, and I have to admit I was a bit intimidated at first when I was accepted to speak. There's so many incredible professionals here, and this is just my first step into public health. This is my very first time at APHA, but I am very excited to share this research with you, which was something that I conducted over a one-year period. I did live in Panama City and did a series of survey and focus groups, but really I want to capture the voice of the women that I met in Panama. I'd like to acknowledge some of my wonderful mentors, co-authors, and collaborators, a few of which are able to join us here today, including Dr. Arlene Calvo and Morgan Hess-Holtz, my wonderful statistician. And there are various other authors who couldn't join us today, but my PI, Dr. Vasconi-Garbinati, and Dr. Sheila Murphy as well. We did receive funding. It was based off of a parent project that was funded by the National Cancer Institute, as well as funded fully by the Wright Foundation through the Dean's Research Scholars Program at my medical school, which promotes medical students spending 1 year on dedicated research. I have no financial disclosures. And we had approval from both my medical school and a committee within Panama. So why cervical cancer? For me, this was a subject that really grabbed my attention when I was in medical school because this is largely a preventable disease that continues to kill women globally. We have over 250,000 deaths worldwide, and unfortunately, a disproportionate amount of these deaths occur in developing nations, with 87% occurring in less developed nations. This is no exception in Latin America and the Caribbean, where cervical cancer accounts for more life years lost than breast cancer, tuberculosis, maternal condition, or AIDS. And although the Pap testing, Papanicolaou, has really brought down the incidence in lots of parts of the world, it's costly and challenging to implement this in countries with more rural areas or more limited resources. Panama, we chose this country for several reasons. Panama is a small country in Central America and traditionally has had very high rates of cervical cancer. A lot of the foundational studies that actually elucidated the risk factors for cervical cancer, including smoking and actually HPV itself, that direct connection, a lot of those studies were done in Panama in the late 1980s. And although it has recently dropped to number 2 in both terms of incidence and mortality, it's falling just behind breast cancer, it still continues to be the second leading cancer killer of women in Panama. It accounts for 12% of the cancer deaths every year. My wonderful mentor, Dr. Calvo, did some work on this a few years back, looking at why do we have this continuation of cervical cancer killing women? Why are we falling short? And just to give you a bit of background about the healthcare system in Panama, it has a wonderful universal access to care. There's two main parts of the system. There's the Caja de Seguro Social, which is the Social Security system, which offers coverage to approximately 80% of the population. The remainder who are not formally employed or do not qualify for Social Security have access through the Ministry of Health, which I'll be referring to as MINSA by its acronym in Spanish for the rest of the presentation. And then those who have the resources and are able to afford it can access healthcare through the private sector as well. So considering that ideally, in a perfect world, this would eliminate the financial and some of the structural barriers to care, Dr. Calvo had done some work looking at what other barriers might prevent women from getting Pap screening. She found that it was really some cultural factors, fear, embarrassment, shame, and a lack of knowledge that really stood in the way of these women getting properly screened. An exciting new element that has entered the picture recently is the HPV vaccine. And as you know, this can prevent infection with two strains that cause over 70% of cervical cancer. And one thing that was really exciting for me to learn throughout this process was that Panama is really poised as a world leader in terms of this vaccine. They've been offering the vaccine since 2008, completely free of charge as part of the national vaccine program to all 10-year-old girls. If you look at these coverage rates, it's really kind of incredible. They've grown steadily since the program was implemented in 2008, and three-dose coverage is most recently reported at 80.6%. To give you a bit of context, here in the United States, I believe our most recent three-dose coverage was somewhere in the high 30s. So they were the first in Latin America to do this, one of the first in the world. But I really wanted to kind of revisit this topic of cervical cancer prevention in the context of this vaccine that's now being delivered and look at if this has changed at all the perceptions, if women are more aware of HPV, but also to see what the community perceptions and the acceptability of the vaccine is. So our study design, I originally planned to just do a quantitative survey. This was a survey based off of, adapted from my mentor's work. This was the NCI-funded project that I mentioned at the beginning. So we culturally adapted and pre-tested this among the community. And once I really got into the thick of the survey, I found that there were really some deeper, more qualitative points that I wanted to tease out as well. So we actually created a focus group script based on some of the interactions I had had during the survey collection. We interviewed women aged 18 to 65. I wanted to get at women who are at risk for cervical cancer, but also women who are mothers and grandmothers of girls who are eligible for the vaccine. And we recruited primarily at a site, the Centro de Salud 24 de Diciembre, which is a MINSA public health center. This is, as you can see from the picture, this is the entrance to the health center. This is just adjacent to Panama City, a semi-rural area, but fairly representative of a limited resource setting in the adjacent Panama City area. We recruited using a convenience sample, a grab sample of women waiting for services in the clinic. In the first half, we were recruiting them for an anonymous survey. In the second half, we invited them to return the following week to participate in a focus group. I administered the verbal survey and was recording the results, and the focus groups were conducted by experienced Panamanian interviewers and recorded and transcribed. To give you an idea of the few of the types of questions we asked in the focus group, these were very general questions. What have you heard about HPV? Who's at risk for HPV? How do you think it can be transmitted? Just to really tease out some of the underlying belief systems that were behind some of the results I got on my survey. And we did our thematic analysis with Deduce. So in total, we invited 119 women to participate. We had a response rate of 95%, and we had 47 participants in a series of four focus groups. Just to give you a snapshot, an overview of the type of woman that ended up being recruited in our study. You can see here the blue represents our survey participants. There was 113, and the red bars are the focus group participants. And these were distinct groups. They were anonymously collected for each, so we weren't unfortunately able to have the same woman who took the survey participate in the focus groups, but you can see here that they're very similar groups. Primarily younger women aged 18 to 25, most of them unmarried, cohabitating with a spouse. Almost all of them were born in Panama, and we had close to half that had less than a high school education. Primarily self-reported race was mestiza, which represents a mix between indigenous and Spanish ancestry. And income, they are on the dollar in Panama, and to give you kind of a frame of reference for the 40 to 50% that have less than 400 US dollars as a combined monthly income, that is minimum wage in Panama. So close to a third to a quarter of my sample was living below what is considered minimum wage. And then 70% more or less were unemployed in both groups. And coverage was one of my first questions. How many women are actually getting tested? And unfortunately, the statistics that are available on a national level are a bit fragmented because there's the different healthcare systems and it's difficult to capture the private sector. The only estimates that I'd seen on a national level were pretty abysmal. It was 25% coverage. This was more encouraging. We had 82% of our women reporting that they had had a pap test in the past 3 years. 12%, though, had never had a pap test. And these were almost identical among our focus group participants. When asked what causes cervical cancer, you can see that over half of my participants had no idea. I don't know what causes cervical cancer. There was some association with sex. There was some women, a little less than 10%, were aware of HPV, but in general, this was a largely not understood concept. As far as HPV, I was pleasantly surprised to see that over 80% had heard of HPV, human papillomavirus, and close to 60% were aware that HPV is transmitted via sexual activity. And then this was one of the questions that really prompted us to dig a little deeper with the focus groups. So when asked if they were personally at risk for HPV, we had a lot of mixed answers here. We had almost half reporting, I don't really know, 35% reporting no, and only 18% reporting yes. And this was something that when I was administering the surveys, I sort of stopped and would often ask, why do you feel that way? And the most common response that I got for the no's were, solo tengo una pareja, I only have one partner. And to me, this kind of elucidated a lack of knowledge there that even if you only have one partner, your partner may have had other partners before. How do you know your partner only has one partner now? And it really suggested that there was a learning opportunity there. But then on the other side, when women would answer don't know, and I would ask why, they would often say, nunca sabe, you never know. I have my husband, but I don't know what he does when he's not here. So there was kind of a split between women seeing they were possibly at risk but didn't really want to acknowledge, yes, I am actually at risk, and those who felt that because they had one partner, they were not at risk. As far as attitudes about pap testing, we asked women a series of questions. How blank do you think a pap test is? How embarrassing, how painful, how costly, how important? And most women found that it was extremely important. And I was pleased to see that a minority of women found it to be extremely embarrassing, painful, or costly. So these are some of the barriers that are reported in literature among Latinas in the United States, and they did not appear to be a significant factor among our population. Structural barriers did come into play. We had about a quarter of women reporting that they had been unable to seek care due to transportation, childcare, or inability to miss work, being too busy. So even though the universal healthcare system does eliminate some of the financial and structural barriers, there still was some difficulty with accessing these resources. For me, the most interesting part of this was the vaccine. So only 42.5% of the women that I talked with had heard about the vaccine. And for me, this originally raised a lot of questions. How can we have 80% coverage and only 40% of the population is aware that the vaccine exists? And to give you a little bit of context, the way the vaccine is being administered currently, there are two main avenues. It's being delivered via the public school system, and it's also being delivered to the health centers through both MINSA and the Social Security system. And as far as the school system goes, kind of from some personal experience working in the community and speaking with some representatives from the schools, there is definitely an attempt to send permission slips and request parent consent, but in reality, it doesn't seem that that's always happening, as evidenced by our data here that even though we have fairly good coverage, a lot of women are completely unaware that their daughters are receiving the vaccine. And only 24% were available that it was aware that it was available at these public health centers. But the really encouraging thing for me was that despite the fact that this was unknown to almost 60% of my population, after I briefly oriented them about the vaccine, 97.4% of women reported that they would vaccinate their daughters. So knowledge was limited, but acceptability was quite high. And this was something that I found throughout my time in Panama. There's this incredibly positive culture around vaccines. Panamanians love their vaccines. They really, really do. I would tell them about the vaccine, and they would say, oh, well, how about my older daughter, and how about my son, and can I get vaccinated? I'm going to bring my husband in, and he's going to get vaccinated, too. They just have such a positive conception of vaccines that the knowledge is not even necessarily a factor for them. They do need to know about it in order to bring them in and take advantage of the opportunity, but there really wasn't much resistance to the vaccine. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about some of the focus group data. If you remember, I said that we had a significant number of women that had heard about HPV and close to 60% were aware it was transmitted sexually. So after the survey, I thought, we're in pretty good shape. I think people know what this is. And then when we did the focus groups, we found that that was really the limit of the knowledge. That was really where it stopped for most women. Frequently, the responses were, I've heard about it, but I don't really know what it is. I don't really know how it passes. A lot of women didn't understand that it could also be passed by oral sex. And in general, it was just lumped in with sexually transmitted infections and confused with a lot of similar symptoms. So you can see in the quote in yellow here, one woman compared it to, I think there was some confusion with urinary tract infection. She talked about burning when you pee, headache, kind of a lot of misinformation about what HPV might cause. There was also some misconceptions about transmission, this idea that you could get it from toilet seats, clothing, that it was somehow associated with abortions or having sex when one is menstruating. And then again, treatment just reflects the general confusion of HPV with other sexually transmitted infections, that it can be treated with creams, ovulos, which are suppository medications, or injections. And another important thing that I don't have listed on this slide, but an interesting thing that came up was the role of men in HPV. And there was this concept that I saw frequently that the man is the carrier, but that he doesn't have HPV. El hombre se lo pega a la mujer. The man passes it to the woman, but he doesn't actually have it. So that was another misconception, and sort of what role men play, can men actually have HPV, was something that came up frequently. We also wanted to look at what motivates women to get a pap test. And one of the most powerful things that came out was this idea of family. And And women talked very passionately and very excitedly about getting this test to be healthy for their children, to be able to provide for their children, to be able to provide for their family. On the flip side, we also wanted to look at barriers. And while most of the women who came in, although they might not understand exactly what a pap test was for, a lot of times it was more associated with just general feminine health rather than cancer prevention, they talked a lot about their neighbors, their parents, their the other women in their community who might not be the women that come into the health center who still had no idea what a pap test was. And we found that a lot of the women were getting pap tested during pregnancy. They would come in and be part of prenatal care. But as soon as they had their last child, they wouldn't necessarily ever get a pap test again. It was something that was more seen as part of prenatal care. Probably the most powerful barrier that came up in the focus groups, and unfortunately was missed in our survey completely, was this idea of fear. And there was fear on multiple levels. Fear about the test itself, fear about abnormal results. We had several women who had gotten pap tested, told they had an abnormal result, and were just absolutely paralyzed with fear and never went back for follow-up. This woman here told us about an experience where she was referred to NSCC, which is the National Cancer Society, and just the idea that that's where they send people with cancer, she never went back. And it turns out this was 9 years ago, and when we had our focus group, she still had not gone back to follow up on that test result. So it really, for me as a future physician, emphasized something I'm never going to forget, making sure that when I counsel patients about this, that I'm very clear about the meaning of this result and why I'm sending them where I'm sending them, and that there's actually something that can be done, that this doesn't mean you have cancer, and even if you do, that doesn't mean that you're going to die. There's really a lot of the lack of knowledge, I think, perpetuates this fear of the unknown and really creates a lot of anxiety that prevents women from seeking adequate care. Another concept that came up was this idea of shame and fertility and femininity as well. So this woman was talking to us about when she was given her diagnosis of HPV, and she immediately jumped to cancer and then immediately jumped to losing her uterus. So there was a lot of talk with both HPV and cervical cancer about having your organs taken out, which is not necessarily incorrect in advanced cases of cervical cancer. The treatment will often consist of hysterectomy. But she talked about sort of the emotional trauma of this, and the idea of having her uterus removed reflected not only an inability to have children, but also robbed her of her womanhood itself. So you can see that there's a lot of emotional ties and fear really woven throughout these topics. Again, I already mentioned the vaccine is seen as very positive. Women were really excited about this, and I think it really speaks to the strength of Panama's vaccine program, and that the cultural environment is very supportive of vaccines. So we've already talked about most of these. So in conclusion, there was a lot of misinformation and lack of knowledge among the community, and there is some, although there was some stigma associated with these factors, we found that in our focus groups, women were really very excited and passionate to talk about these issues when in the right, safe environment, when they were sort of had this anonymous and close family to speak with. We feel that it's very important to create some targeted educational materials, specifically emphasizing the role in cancer prevention that pap testing has, as well as more information about the symptoms, transmission, and treatment of HPV. And I think the vaccine holds great promise. If we can continue to educate and bring that number of the awareness up, make more than 42% of women aware that the vaccine is available, I think we can bring the coverage even higher than the 80% that it's at. My sample was limited by its size, and unfortunately, due to lack of funding and human resources, I was only able to do a convenience sample from one clinic. I do think we were able to capture some of the qualitative information from the women talking about their loved ones. And future directions, we did end up creating a multimedia toolkit that's been distributed through Promotores de Salud. We also published in the national newspaper covering the top 10 myths about HPV and cervical cancer to kind of start breaking some of those myths that are so prevalent in the community. We're also working on statistical analysis to hopefully elucidate some of the predictors that can help us see who will get a pap test and elucidate a little further about the vaccine and cervical cancer knowledge. These are my sources. Thank you very much.